Hey y'all, this is a fun review we got on Apple Podcast. Such insightful conversations from K.S. Williams. Hearing conversations like these is hard to find. I learned so much from listening to this podcast and enjoy the openness and honesty in these conversations. Great podcast.
Yay!
That's sweet. I'm glad there are people who like all the openness that
to the table. Sometimes you wonder if they want to hear how open I'm being.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you like fun parts, we would so appreciate if you would leave a review. It helps kick us up on the algorithm so new listeners can find the show. Thanks so much.
From Milieu Media Group, this is Fun Parts, an exploration of sexuality and spirituality for anyone who's curious or convinced there must be more. With your hosts, Latifa Alatas, Ashley Lusink, Steve Weens, Luke Bronner, and me, Becky Patton.
Fun Parts!
Okay, so I'm just going to pose a question for the table.
Okay.
Thinking of movies, entertainment, what was your earliest exposure to sex? However you would interpret that question.
Batman and Robin.
Okay.
Wow. Tell me about that.
Like, well, Batman, because Batman together, and Robin?
Well, kind
of. As a couple? But
there was a lot of sexual tension between those two.
A lot of tights.
It's the tights.
Adam West. Are you talking about the Adam West version?
It was the tights that Robin wore, and I could see that bulge, and I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, it was like, I was a kid.
But you're
it was
curious.
Like, oh
well,
my gosh,
I was so
cute.
He was so
he
young.
Was too, but he still had a bulge. And it was like this.
Were you attracted to the bulge? I mean, I've always been curious about that.
Fascinated.
Like, that's just so
no,
weird.
I'm actually more a butt man.
But it's.
Yeah. I'm actually.
I'm a butt,
I'm a butt woman.
Okay. Yeah.
In the sense that
you like
I
butts.
Like.
Well, Rick,
I like
Rick
how.
Rick has a nice
oh
butt.
Oh my gosh, he does. And that's just what I'm attracted to.
It's wonderful.
In fact, I have a great butt story.
Yes, please.
Oh my gosh. I was at church. Have you heard me tell this?
This is such a good
oh my gosh.
This is the best place to discuss this.
Yes. And there's before the service started, they put everybody and the people that were part of the service, they would stand in the circle and we'd pray together. And I'd gone in there with Rick and we were praying. We were getting ready to pray. I turned my back for something, turned back around, and he had on khaki pants. And so the prayer circle's going on. I reach down and start caressing his butt. Just, I mean, nobody knows what's going on. I like to have sexual touch with my husband in places where it's kind of fun. And I'm caressing, and all of a sudden I look up and I see my husband across
no.
the circle.
No.
And one of our pastor's husbands was standing right next to me.
No.
And he looked down at me. He goes, "That feels really great. But I think it'd be better if it was your husband."
That's a perfect response.
That is.
I was going to say, did
I
he like
he
lean in?
It like that too. Yeah. That feels really great.
He did.
And I don't really want you to stop.
But
you should stop.
But I'm just, I am attracted to male butts and mostly my husband's, but you know, I mean, that's a thing.
Butts and bulges.
They are, but it was like, that was my first. So anyway, that's my first. I mean, I was a kid.
You're such a wordsmith.
Yeah.
Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin. Cause it was like, I mean, I was in the 60s.
Well, sure.
It was in the 60s. And my gosh, it was like, that was, there's a bulge there. What is that?
Spandex.
Yeah. Spandex was, it was green.
Yeah.
The spandex, I hope not.
The spandex was, I don't know what
the color of life.
I never got to see more than that. But yeah,
it's good.
How about you?
I don't know the first, but one of the episodes of a television show that really impacted me was I was a big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, like huge. Anything supernatural, I'm still very much into. And sorry, spoiler alert, but the show's been out for a really long time. So the whole series kind of sets up that Buffy, who is the slayer of vampires, falls in love with this vampire who got his soul back named Angel. And he can't kill people because his soul came back in his body. He was like cursed, you know, so he has to like drink like blood from hospitals or animals or, you know, he's basically like a veggie vampire. But anyways, I know. Long
veggie
story short,
vampire.
There's all this sexual tension built for season one and you just want them to be together so badly. So they end up finally having sex for the first time. And it's like this crazy, awesome scene and all this chemistry is happening. And you know, the way they show it in television is just people like rolling around in sheets. And the most you see of the woman is her naked back, right? Mm-hmm. And there's just all this like passion. And then the moment they're done having sex, he loses his soul. Because the curse was that, like, if he ever finds true happiness, he'll, like, lose his soul and be, like, the most murderous vampire of, like, all
So suddenly time. This lover turns into a
vampire
raging.
That becomes her, like, arch nemesis because she's the slayer of vampires. And now he's going on like murderous rampages. And somehow that just communicated to me that the moment you get happy,
yeah,
it's gone, baby.
Yes.
Which honestly, that's a hard reality for me now. Not like the Buffy, but like it's just the other shoe's going to drop.
Yeah.
Kind of scenario.
That's
so I really have thought about that a lot since I watched it as a teenager.
Formative, yeah.
It was formative, but the sex looked really awesome until he lost his soul.
So there was no down cuddle time afterwards.
No, it was like they like kind of do the, and you can tell they're like so happy to be together. And all of a sudden he's like, ugh! He like his body contorts because his soul is being ripped out of his body.
As it does.
As it happens. And honestly, it could be a reflection on Puritan culture.
Like, well, you know, orgasm means little death, so.
There it is. There. Soul death.
Wow.
Wow.
So, yeah.
We just took a turn.
From Batman to Buffy to soul death.
Buffy Vampire Slayer, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have a couple of memories, and I shared this with you all off mic last night, but I had this thing when I was a kid where if I were doing something I wasn't supposed to or experiencing something, or if I was getting in trouble, whatever, I would get really dizzy. And so there's a few things that I remember making me really dizzy as a kid. One of those was I remember finding a VHS tape of the movie Fright Night. It was like this 80s horror movie. And I knew I wasn't supposed to watch it because it was a horror movie, but I put it in. And one of the very first scenes is this woman like opening up the curtains of her house and she's topless. And it was the first time I'd ever seen. And I was just like, oh God, I'm dizzy.
Oh, that's really sweet.
The same thing would happen though with certain music. So Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard always made me dizzy and a little bit
Randy,
nauseous.
Randy. Yeah.
And then there was another one. So MC Hammer, I was a huge MC Hammer fan.
As you should be. As you should be.
I just saw you with the pants.
I never had the pants. I always wanted them. But he had a song on his biggest record called Soft and Wet. And
MC.
The lyrics.
Wow.
Over and over and over, they're singing, I like them soft and wet. And I didn't know what that meant, but I knew it meant something that I was not supposed to hear.
That's how I felt about LL Cool J's doing it and doing it and doing it well. Oh, wow, I was like, what are they doing? And how are they so great at it?
Yes.
But I like this song.
They're great at their craft.
Yeah. Those are early memories for me of just getting very dizzy.
That is so great. The blood pressure rises, the sugar level drops, whatever.
Well, because the blood was all rushing to other parts of your body.
Right.
Oh, okay, here we go.
And now
let's
I'm
just
a
be honest.
Butts and bulges.
Fun butts and bulges. So I was born in 1970. In 1983, our family moved from Southern California to Waterloo, Belgium. My life in Southern California was centered around our church, Christian school, very, you know, that was the bubble. But when we got to Belgium, like my friends and I, seventh grade, we would take the train to Brussels to watch movies, right? And so I remember that was my thing. Like we would watch, I mean, I think I saw 9 1/2 weeks in the theater, but even like St. Elmo's Fire.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And they're in the 80s, even funny movies like, you know, Fletch or Animal House, whatever. There was going to be a scene of women in the shower. Topless 100%. Women in the shower. And that was like the move that all those movies made. And I remember just going from this, again, bubble where I never would have watched any of those movies or gone to any of those movies to all of a sudden being, it was just all was out in front of me. And I loved it. I was like, this is awesome. Oh my gosh.
I love that.
Especially 9 1/2 weeks. I don't remember when that came out. But I mean, that is like, I think they're having sex in that movie. I don't think that, that was. I mean, anyway, like, whoo.
Made an impact.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, three seventh grade boys watching this. And then all
that's
of a sudden just.
So awkward.
So what are we going to do next?
Popcorn, anybody?
Like,
oh my gosh.
I would like to stay and watch the rest of the credits, please.
Can we just
because something
stay?
Is happening and I don't have a big enough sweatshirt. I can't
seventh
move.
Grade, it doesn't matter. You could be eating a hamburger and all of a sudden, hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Okay.
Ashley, what about you?
I'm not quite sure how to transition from that.
Well,
pure grass-fed beef.
You're going to try. Bulges?
Wisconsin.
Yes. No, I remember Dances with Wolves.
Oh
my gosh. Yeah. Yes, Kevin Costner. Yeah.
There's that scene in the teepee.
He's got a great butt.
And
it was a butt double.
This large bookshelf, and it had a drawer with all the movies in, and there was this one movie that I couldn't watch, and it was Dances with Wolves. And I just had like this aura around it that it just felt like it was going to be this really big, I don't know what I had in my mind, but I remember when I finally got to watch it, I was like, this is actually beautiful.
Yeah.
And what's so bad? Like, cause they really don't show much of anything, really. I think there's, again, the back.
It's the back side. Yeah.
But I think it was so much more of the do not touch kind of the mystery and that kind of thing. So then when I did actually to see it, I was like, that was it.
I will say watching him cut a peach in The Bodyguard.
Oh my gosh.
It did something to me.
Bodyguard was unbelievable.
You can say that again.
Cut a peach.
Do you remember that scene? He's just like cutting a peach with a knife and eating it.
Just
and
slowly.
Then he's throwing knives because he's an expert bodyguard.
You know what though? He was like love scenes for him for like, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's a movie with him and Madeline Stowe. And Madeline Stowe is like the wife of this Mexican mob boss. And he comes down and helps this guy. And then like he and Madeline Stowe are starting to.
How can they not?
And they have this scene where they're doing with lemons. They're
juicing lemons.
It's and fruit then,
fruit.
You know, he like one of them comes Kevin around Costner and touches the, oh my gosh. And it's like
the ghost clay moment.
Oh my gosh.
Except with.
I've always wanted to do that. That actually did something to me too.
I remember I love that wheel throwing.
Patrick Swayze and
scene,
Demi Moore.
And it was, I remember I did a wheel throwing class when I was in graduate school. And I just like, every time I was throwing a pot poorly, I was just like, where's my Patrick Swayze?
Can someone just come behind me and just
Dirty Dancing also did something. I mean, I don't know.
Wow.
I mean, Dirty Dancing was, that did something.
It did something.
Okay. So the reason I ask is so that we can get into a conversation about influences, our sexual influences.
So early on, one of the things that we know how the brain actually fires is it receives in these inputs, and what it's actually doing is it's trying to find a place to store them. So new inputs, like you were saying, those three seventh grade boys, you're all having a shared experience, but you're receiving the input into your brain, and it's trying to find a place to actually store it. So even like the first time you saw the naked woman, your brain, if it hasn't had that before, is looking for like, where does this go? It's trying to find resolve. So when the brain actually receives a new input, it's what it's actually looking for is where does this belong in my brain? And when we don't have something, what it's doing is it's creating a new dendrite. And so what I think happens so often is when things come in that are scary or new or we don't have a language around it, I want to say that's one of the things that the brain, not knowing what to do with it, kind of creates a deeper path of because it's startled, we're taken out of what we call the window of tolerance of how we can actually receive something, of things that we know to be just normal part of life. And so it moves us into this fight or flight or freeze is what it does, either hyperarousal or hypoarousal. And so what ends up happening oftentimes, I think, for especially children, is they jump into their hyperarousal and then they go into the total freeze of hypoarousal. And it's as they're doing that, their body is trying to assimilate something. So that's actually it influences how we go forward. Like, imagine the difference if you'd been sitting next to someone, I'm talking to you, Luke, in the sense that sitting next to someone and like a fatherly figure that could go, oh, I bet you've never seen that before, have you? Yeah, and that stirs something. That's a woman's body. Her body is beautiful, yes, but her body is meant to be respected. I mean, to have somebody, just even that's a one-minute conversation with you. I mean, to be able to help you understand as your sexuality is actually arising and growing and things like that, it's like even with seventh-grade boys to be able to go, yeah, you know, it's really enticing and there's something so beautiful. And to be able to name sex as something that it is something, but it's so beautiful when it's between people that really respect and value one another. And it's hot and it's fun and it's pleasurable. To be able to put language around it for you, because when you're in that free state, you can't. And that helps to bring you back into your window of tolerance. And I think even Ashley, I'm hearing yours and I'm thinking, how beautiful would that have been for your mom to say, I really want you to see this. But I want you to be able to see it when you can hold it and not, I want you to have a little more understanding. So we're going to put it here and I'm going to sit down and watch this with you at some point because I want you to get to see the beauty of this.
As I'm thinking about it, I think it was years later, even just recently thinking back to that and how understanding like, no, there was something really beautiful about what was happening there. But at that time, I didn't have language for it.
Yeah. And, you know, another film that was very influential to me was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which probably nobody in this group has actually been seen. I don't know.
I haven't seen
Jack Nicholson. Anyways, but there's this element in it. It was an R-rated movie at the time, and I remember that I was 13 years old. And my dad went to see it, and he came home that day, got me, and he says, there's a movie you have to see, but I have to see it with you. And it's a story of protection. It's a story of somebody who's on the fringe actually, and he moves in, he's in this mental hospital, but it's such a story of love at the core and caring for your brother and listening to people's story and seeing people's pain and being present to it. And one of the things I think my dad saw in me very early on is I knew how to sit with people in pain. I mean, I was just like, oh my God, my dad's taking me to an R-rated movie. And he sat next to me the whole time. He had his arm around me. And when the movie was done, while the credits are rolling, I remember him saying, honey, there's a lot of pain in this world. And the reality is we get to decide how we're going to respond to it.
Dang.
And that became a reference point for us. Like something would happen and he would refer back to the movie. And there's sex, there's violence, there's huge vulgarity in that. I mean, it's everything that a 13-year-old kid shouldn't see, but yet partnered with somebody who could help me define it. It was pivotal to my, I want to say, even into this exploration of sexuality and spirituality for me.
Wow.
Because that formed something in me. I didn't have the language. I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the dendrites to be able to put that anywhere, but I had somebody partnering with me. And that's what I think is, who are the people, where are the places, what is influencing us, and who are the voices that we're actually listening to?
Mm.
In all of our stories, all but you, Steve, we were alone when we experienced it.
Yeah.
You were with your buddies, but I don't know, did you guys talk about it?
No, I'm sure we didn't.
Yeah. And that's what my big concern is so many kids are learning about sex through media or through their friends.
Well,
For sure.
I want to say one more story about that, because in 10th grade, I mean, this is such a cliche locker room story, but those cliches come out of reality, right? So we're sitting in the locker room. I was on the varsity basketball team, and this one senior was just holding court. And he asked us all, like, so, you know, who knows what the inside of a vagina feels like?
Wow.
And I didn't in 10th grade. And you know, so people are like, you know, and then he said, okay, well, how many girls have you slept with to someone? And then they shot back, well, what about you? And this guy was a very good looking guy, kind of stereotypical big man on campus kind of thing. And he thinks about it and he goes, oh, probably about 100.
Oh my gosh.
Now,
amazing.
I'll give him double digits, probably, you know, but 100. And the rest of us were just like...
What's his name? Wilt Chamberlain?
Yep. I was on the varsity basketball team with Wilt. And that's another influence where it's like, all of a sudden, it really was about conquest and who's better than who and who's done this and who hasn't done this. And I don't remember particularly feeling any like shame for not, but the environment was definitely filled with exaggerations and lies and also a kind of swaggering. You know, you think about a 17, even this guy who I think probably did have some experience, you know, but really, you know, this guy's going to hold court, right? But when you're just in that environment, you're not thinking like, oh, bullshit, you know, you're kind of going like, whoa. Oh my God.
I got some catching up to do.
Yeah. What the, you know, so that was formative too.
Yeah. When I think about peer pressure essentially being one of the influences, I mean, I think back to like late elementary and even junior high. When I was a kid, if people asked you if you were straight, that had nothing to do with your sexual orientation. It had everything to do with like, are you a prude or not? Like, how far do you go with girls or with guys or whatever? And so that was a thing that you aspired not to be, was straight. And if someone asked you if you're straight, you're like, no, I'm not straight. Like I'd
do stuff.
Yeah, I would totally do stuff. I didn't kiss a girl till I was 16 years old, but I'd 100% back then be like, I'm not straight. No, I'm not straight.
See, that was the thing, like for dudes, like you did not want to be prudish, no experience. That would have been
a high degree of shame. Being virginal is being desirable. And like if you had a reputation for not being a prude, you were a slut.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it was scandalous. Yes. I actually remember in eighth grade, I was in sixth grade. I went over to my girlfriend's house. She had a brother in eighth grade, or maybe he was a freshman. And we walked into the house and him and all his buddies were watching some porn. And it was a woman doing fellatio. That's mm-hmm. the right term for it, yeah. right? And I saw it maybe 10 seconds or less. I mean, I remember seeing it and it took me a few seconds to register what I was seeing.
What's happening?
Because yeah. I had never seen a penis before. So I didn't quite even understand. And I was, 12 years old? And I mean, I can still see that scene in my brain. Mm-hmm. I can recall mm-hmm. the exact image I saw for 10 seconds. And I looked away and I was trying to understand what I saw. And my friend was like, oh, he and his buddies are just watching porn. And I was kind of horrified because I just didn't understand what was happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't see a penis again until I was an art major in college. And so we did figure drawing. Mm-hmm. And I remember being so nervous to look at it that I took my glasses off and I just like let it be blurry. And my art prof came around the table. Her name was Mary. And she goes, Latifah, you know, I love how you did his head and the shape of his body, but she's like, you're missing an essential part of the person. And I was like, well, it's suggested.
That's what is I that told her. Blurry part?
What is the cloud with a lightning
is
bolt?
Is it interpretive?
Yeah. Is the that a fig leaf? Did you draw a fig leaf?
Which is,
okay. And I felt really embarrassed.
Yeah.
Because right. I was like, I was 18 and nobody else seemed to be embarrassed. And then I just realized like, it's just the body. Mm-hmm. And I kept my glasses on or my contacts in, you know, for the rest of my figure drawing classes. And I've come to really love figure drawing. Obviously, I haven't done it in a long time. But I think that that experience when I was 12 made me afraid for some reason of what I didn't understand. And nobody in my family wanted to – I mean, my dad was Muslim, so he's definitely not talking to his girls about that. And I didn't talk to my mom about it. And all I got from church was – you know, sex is bad until you're married and don't touch anything or do anything. And that's the extent we're going to talk about it. And so it just created this unknown fear. Mm-hmm. And it kind of took an art class to like, made me realize there's no shame about the form. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually beautiful.
Yeah.
I think the irony to that is I went to a Christian college and was an art major.
Were you really?
Well, under graphic design. Oh. But those classes, everyone was fully clothed. Like the figures
were
clothed.
Were they wearing spandex?
No, like, no.
Yeah, were there bulges?
There were no bulges to even draw? No cleavage
jeans,
either, right?
Literally jeans and a football jersey.
That's disappointing.
How do you draw a yes. figure? Only you're drawing clothes.
Only in America. Exactly. Football yeah. jersey seems
but
right.
But think about like, talk about like, let's amplify the mystery of the body when we're not even. Yeah. I remember that being like such a hot topic and all these things. And like, we were more saintly, you know, because we didn't expose someone. You know, and just that. So just to hear you say like your experience with that, like, oh my gosh, I feel like I missed out.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't sexual for me. It, like all of a sudden you start to look at the form mm-hmm. and you realize, like, I love drawing women as much as probably even more than I love mm-hmm. drawing men because, and I love drawing full figure people because mm-hmm. it's, I mean, you look at the history of Renaissance art, it's always full figured females.
Oh, it's full figure. Yeah. Folds and everything.
And even, yeah, it's gorgeous. And so it really calmed me down. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was a senior when a younger student came because I led worship all through college for Campus Crusade for Christ. She came up to me and she said, you know, I'm in my first figure drawing class. Like, what did you do? And I told her my story and I was like, you're going to be fine. If you're really uncomfortable, you can drop the class. But like,
or take off your glasses.
Yes. Yeah, or take off your clothes. No, I'm kidding. Oh no, I was just like, it's really, I was like, for me, what it did was it helped me realize that the body's very beautiful. And I felt like I'm appreciating what God has designed. And there's nothing sexual about it.
Well, but I want to say there's nothing wrong mm-hmm. about the body being sensual.
I agree.
But I think we've been taught that sexual falls over in this category and holiness falls way over here in the other category. But I think there's something really important about being in your body and recognizing just because I am married mm-hmm. doesn't mean I'm dead
no.
physically.
Yeah.
There are moments, and Steve, you were talking about on one of the other episodes about we feel this spark and we assume that it has to end in physical connection. And no, what is it? There's a beauty about just feeling this spark of sensually being alive and aware
yeah.
of our body and where tingling is happening and where burning is happening. And it's like, it's not wrong to feel that. That's how our body's made to yeah. respond. I mean, it's made to, your body was made to respond to the beauty of those breasts being revealed to you. But the reality is you didn't have anybody to help you with what do I do with
That's
that.
What I mean. Like, I think about the porn experience for me. It was unknown, unexplained, and scary. And it was new information versus a class where I'm like, I know it's coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. My professor came over and just talked me through it. Mm-hmm. Like, it was safe and I wasn't in shock and I didn't not understand.
I think part of the experience for me, though, was that before I'd been exposed to anything sexual, I'd already received the messaging that sexuality was inherently wrong, morally wrong. Yeah. And so I think that's where like I would get dizzy because I was very concerned as a kid with being a good boy. I just wanted to be a good boy. And so when I was exposed to something or I encountered something that made me think like I'm doing something wrong, even though I had no other information about like what I was experiencing, like that was the experience for me. It was, oh my gosh, this is bad. I don't know what this is, but I know it's bad. I already knew that going in. And I think that is like a perfect lead in to the third pillar that we talked about in episode one of the idea that sexuality and spirituality are intentionally intertwined. I'd love to hear where that language came from for you.
Where it really came from was, I want to say, Celtic tradition. There's a book that Philip Newell wrote, and it's called Echo of the Soul. And when I first started reading this book, one of the things that happened for me is the subtitle of the book is The Sacredness of the Human Body. And it was like, I began to be like, just when I, like in the other episode, I shared about the fact of I hated my body and I wanted to actually love my breast and I didn't know how to. I had to actually engage and recognize that where I was at is I hated something. I hated something about the human body. And the reality is, if I hate something about the human body, what I'm saying is I hate what the Creator created. And so when I picked up this book and I started, it was one of the books of many that I've read in the Celtic tradition. There's such a sacredness to the human body. There's a sacredness to nature. There's just a sacredness of how I treat you impacts me. There's just this interconnectedness that I think is really beautiful. So one of the things that I started to do, just even learning how to enjoy my own breasts, was it began to move into, I could actually then enjoy other women's breasts. I wasn't comparing because I would be able to look and see a larger breasted woman and go, oh, and I began to think, I wonder what kind of bra she wears, you know, versus it being a comparison thing. Does she love her breasts? Because I knew my own journey and experience, and it became a really deep place of trusting God as creator. Wow. Like, what do these breasts actually? And then I had a very dear friend of mine that got breast cancer, and she had to have both of her breasts removed. And it was just hard work to go through with her because when they removed her breasts, suddenly she said she didn't feel like a woman anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll never forget, we had kids about the same age. I was over at her house. She's getting dressed and she's having a hard time raising her arm up because of the muscles and the lymph nodes. And so I was helping her get dressed. And she looked at me and she says, I'll never be touched again.
Oh.
My husband will never touch this part of me again. And I looked at her and I went towards her and I put both my hands where her breast used to be. And I put her hands on my breast and I said, I can't give you breasts, but I can share with you. And there was that moment that I knew God had created breasts with purpose, but they're not identity.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
And for her, there were often times she would come and she'd say, can I just touch your breast? I need to remember what a breast feels like. And I was like, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Because I was sharing humanity with her. And I want to say that moment was spiritual for me.
Yes.
It was spiritual. It was sexual. It was sensual. It wasn't sharing one another's bodies, but it was so intimate and it was spiritual. And I went, there was something in me that deepened and I went, oh, sexuality and spirituality are intertwined. I couldn't separate out my physical touch from what was going on deep inside my soul.
You were experiencing deep connectedness, which is exactly what the Creator wants from us, is connectedness to God, to
each other. I was
connected
to God and to her in that moment, and that's where...
That's amazing.
Can I do a nerdy 30 real quick?
Bring it on,
nerdy
30.
Because this is so important. You just used the word sacred and sacredness quite a lot in that whole story. And if you take apart the word sacred, it really That's where we get the word sacramental. And a sacrament, if you think about a sacrament in the Catholic Church, it's marriage, it's First Communion, it's Eucharist. In Protestant churches, typically baptism and Eucharist. But a sacrament is an ordinary thing of life meant to express the mysterious beauty of who God is. And so the bread and the wine in the Eucharist is meant to be these ordinary things that express who God is and how to find God. And so the sacramental breast is what you're talking about. And mm-hmm. when we can expand, I think, sexuality and spirituality, understanding that, because people hear the word sacred, and I think people don't know what to do with that. Like, it's you can't touch something that's sacred.
Yeah. Right.
It's the opposite. Something that's sacramental is something that you're meant to touch and hold and feel so that you can understand who you are and who God is.
Wow, that's so helpful.
Yeah.
And we're definitely titling this episode The Sacramental Breast.
100%.
I think that story is completely beautiful. Here's the work that I feel like is ahead of me. So if we're going to talk about spirituality and sexuality being intentionally intertwined, for me, they are intertwined, but in the wrong way. And I feel like that has to be detangled first for me. Because for me, even 12 years into marriage, there is still some wiring in me that thinks sex is bad. Sex is wrong. Mm. Morally so. Spiritually so. And so I'm curious what you would say, like, how do I begin to deconstruct that so that I can be intentional in my understanding of the ways in which spirituality and sexuality are intertwined?
Yeah, because otherwise it's just, well, I should think of it as holy. You know,
but like,
yeah.
how do you yeah. actually deconstruct that before you reconstruct it?
And yeah.
That makes a lot of
yeah.
sense.
That story is amazing, by the way.
Yeah.
Monday's the anniversary of her death.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Wow.
What was her name?
Joanne. Yeah. Just really miss her.
How long ago was it?
2009. It just never goes away. But I want to say it's part of the tove of our relationship. It's amazing how remembering you can be right there and you can feel the scars. And but for a long time, I said that wasn't sexual. And I was like, no, it was.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it was sensual. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, that sacredness piece, mm-hmm. I was literally, was touching the sacred.
Absolutely.
But I don't think I could have done that if I hadn't done my own work with my own breath.
That's where, again, it's like we tend to think we experience the full life when we get it perfectly right and end up in the center of the concentric circle. And no, I mean, sure, if that's your story, that's great, you know, and yay. But so often it's stories like that. It's like you had to go through your own pain. And then when you touch someone else's pain, something sacred occurs, you know.
Yeah.
Healing happens somehow.
Well, like part of what I take from that, for me, for you to say what you just said about, but it was sexual,
mm-hmm.
the work is to redefine what sexual means yeah. in our minds.
Because yeah. all of a sudden it's like, sexual is dirty.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
like the first
flag. That's exactly
flag that
right. That's the wiring.
But I know but that, think that what you're like, describing is not that.
Yeah, it's not that thing, but it's better. It's if mm-hmm. sexuality is a thing that is intertwined with spirituality, then I just need to change how I understand sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think is really important is I think we've been taught that sexual is dirty and everything erotic is wrong. And even in scripture, there's three different words for love. And one of them actually means eros. Is that, help me here.
There's four.
There's four. Okay, there's four.
But eros is the
flame. Erotic,
it's the
right?
passion.
Yeah, the passion.
Well, and the very word in Hebrew for man and woman holds the Hebrew letters are the words for fire and God put together mm-hmm. are in both man and woman. And so in Hebrew, it says that we are made of fire and God. So I think there's something. Fire can burn, but fire also heats. It warms. It draws.
It gives life.
It gives life. We need fire, and we need the fire of who we are to connect with other people, with God present.
Well, and what you described with your friend was the warmth of a needed flame.
Oh my gosh, she needed that.
That's what I'm saying.
We're crying.
She was freezing.
She was.
And she needed the warmth of a flame.
Okay, so now the episode is called The Sacramental Breast and the Warmth of a Needed Flame. It's just going to keep getting longer because that's just so good.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like how that feels when you're so cold and then you get in front of something mm-hmm. warm and it's almost like initially a little painful because you're tingling mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you can relax into the warmth and mm-hmm. that's what that is.
Well, and you know, part of what we're doing here is like we're saying so much of what we need is embodied, not just in our minds. Like think of it like she just needed to talk to someone. Well, sure. And she needed something embodied. And if everything around the body is hidden, naughty, evil, to be not talked about, then our definition of what it even means to have anything to be embodied is so hidden and narrow and ambiguous. And, you know, so like, I think that's part of it. Like mm-hmm. we're expanding sexuality to include that which is centered in the body, but also that which is centered in the soul and mind and spirit as well.
And are we expanding it? Or are we returning to an original design?
When I was about maybe in the first year of Reed and I being separated and the divorce was not finalized yet. But one of the things I was really grieving was, you know, when you become a single woman in a Christian community, like people don't touch you.
Yeah.
And, oh my gosh.
And so but I can be touchy with my female friends, but I actually missed like just male, like non-sexual touch. Mm-hmm. Like I missed long hugs. Like the male form has a different feeling to me mm-hmm. than the female form. And I went to a movie with a friend, a guy friend of mine who's like a brother. And we went and saw, it doesn't matter what we saw. Because I can't remember. No, it's that movie about water that The Shape of Water.
Oh, The Shape of Water. Oh my gosh, that is a beautiful movie.
Film. Yeah. And we're sitting there watching, and about 10 minutes into the movie starting past the previews, I realize I have not sat by myself with another man in a theater since my ex-husband. And I start feeling so overwhelmed and I am so desperate to like have a hand to hold. Because the one thing Reed and I were really great at was just a lot of hand holding. I love holding hands. I mean, I hold your hand, Becky, all the time. And I remember just sitting in my longing. And I think my friend is very intuitive. And he reached over, not just like put his hand on top of my hand on my lap, pulled my hand over and tucked it into his chest and like interdigitated the fingers and everything. I was never confused for a moment, like, oh, is he into me? Are we going to start dating? Ooh, maybe we'll kiss. It was not that at all. And he held on tight the entire film. And we walked out of the movie and I just put my arm in his arm because that's something we would do. Like mm-hmm. I would do that with a friend or anybody who's like familial. And I looked at him and I said, I want you to know that I know that we're friends. And I want you to know that what you just did for me wasn't confusing for me. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and he actually said, you know what I was thinking when I was next to you is honestly, it sounds so cheesy, but it was beautiful. He was like, what would Jesus do? And he's like, Jesus would hold your hand. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't think about him in a romantic context, but I needed that tight, interdigitated, sweet, like he even did like the rub your skin a little bit. Like it was mm-hmm. just, it was so... And I know that if I had shared that with too many people, they would be confused by that story. But like, it was like a really healing moment for me because mm-hmm. I was so desperate
wow.
for like male affection that I think it even staved me off from like running to go look for it in a really yeah. harmful way to me.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just so grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is beautiful.
And can I ask a question then with it? If I say that was a sexual touch.
It was.
Yeah.
I know it was. It wasn't sexual in that it drove me to want to have sex with him.
Mm-mm.
But my body needed.
Your body needed. And I'm so for what you were saying earlier about how expanding it, does it help us to remember
mm-hmm.
of our deepest, truest design? Because humankind was created and the very first place they're placed is in Eden, which actually means delight. and they're naked. Mm. How do we start to
decouple,
deconstruct that everything sexual is wrong or dirty or something like that?
Or even just inappropriate.
Or inappropriate, mm. yeah. And instead start, I think we have to first encounter our own bodies. And we start by actually like, and I tell people all the time, find one thing you like about your body. I don't care if it's your right index finger, fingernail, if that's all you can celebrate that and notice the way it, you know, I mean, just whatever it is, start learning to celebrate. And the more you start to recognize another thing that every single day, it is fascinating to me that you can eat something and the next day, whatever you don't need leaves your body.
Hmm.
That's fascinating to me. So when I'm eating something, are we mindful of what our body actually needs nutritionally? And that's where I think we can't decouple something without having something to start thinking about.
Hmm.
Because if we just decouple and go, "Huh, okay, sex isn't bad." No, there are people who I want to say are actually using sex as a means of survival, using it for abuse, that are using it in a very destructive way.
You know, Becky, this reminds me of something that you have told me that from time to time, when you're working with a couple that maybe comes from purity culture and is engaged and, but they're like, they're not touching each other. They're not doing anything, that sometimes you sort of give them homework assignments and you say like, you need to tell your partner a body part that you like how it looks. I can do that. You know, and then they do that.
Yeah.
And the next week it's like, now your homework assignment is to touch it. And they're like, wait a minute. Like, you know, and you can see them squirming, right?
Oh
and
my stuff. Gosh, they yep, squirm like yep, crazy. Yep, yep.
But,
butts and bulges.
But I think this is like, this is part of, and you're talking them through mm-hmm. sexuality and spirituality and all this stuff. But I think that helps decouple this idea that you go from 0 to 60, you know, yeah. or 100, 120, mm-hmm. especially purity culture, Christian couples, you can't do anything, then you do everything. No, actually, you can have a progression. And for me, that's very tangible. You know, that's, mm-hmm. that's a very tangible way of understanding. There's a movement to uncoupling. No, it's not bad to think that your partner has a great butt or mm-hmm. other body parts. And even with consent.
Yes.
Okay. And sober consent. I love how you say that. Mm. Ziva, are you okay? You know, yeah. I like that. I like that movement because mm-hmm. it's not... That helps me go from point A to point B to point C to point D as slowly mm-hmm. as I'm comfortable with.
Well, and I want to say that one of the things that in doing premarital counseling with couples, I find repeatedly, I don't ever want to assume where people are at.
Right.
So the question I ask first when we get into, we're supposed to have one 60-minute session on sex, and it's always end up being two or three. It just does. Because there's so many questions and there's so much decoupling that we're doing from what they've actually learned. But the first question I always ask is, how comfortable are you with your own body?
And have you seen Batman and Robin?
Yeah.
Specifically Robin.
Robin. Robin really is the one that had the now green tights that showed himself yeah. through. Black, you couldn't see as much. So, yes. And he had a bigger cape.
Well, it's Adam West. He was about 70 awesome. Years old at the time.
It's not all about the size.
Okay. So. Yeah, it's not all about the size. Anyway, but there's this element. How comfortable are you with your own body? And then the next question is when people will say, well, I'm really comfortable with my body. I think I work out and all the stuff like this. How comfortable are you when you're naked
with
your own body? Have you stood in front of a mirror and seen your body and recognized that the Creator created this body with intention? With passion,
beauty,
and sees it as utterly delightful. And I think we can't begin the work without having something of the hope of what we hope there's more, or curiosity, or just knowing that there's someplace we're going. And I think that's vulnerability because it's a risk. We're stepping off into some of the unknown. It's like the classic Indiana Jones when he's supposed to take that leap of faith. And you notice he does take the step in Indiana Jones when he steps across that bridge. The invisible bridge. But he grabs gravel and throws it out there. And I think that's part of what this is in the decoupling. Is there something we need to – what's our gravel that we need to throw out there? And I think it has to be the hope of other people's hearts and mm-hmm. stories mm-hmm. and those who have gone before us. Because J. Philip Newell says – we're awakening the ancient truth, that have always been there waiting for us to find them.
This episode of Fun Parts was produced, edited, and mixed by me, Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by the very talented Alan Lusink. Nerdy 30 was composed and produced by Latifa Alatas, and other music from this episode is from the fine folks at Blue Dot Sessions. Check out our website at funpartspodcast.com and be sure to follow us on social media at Fun Parts Podcast. Lastly, if you want access to bonus and behind-the-scenes content from this and other Milieu Media Group shows, join our neighborhood at the Patreon link in the show notes. And now, here's a scene from the next episode of Fun Parts.
I do have a working definition for sexual when I experience something sexual. But I want to say my definition started at anything sexual was sex. That's what my definition was. Well, that's sex. Now I want to say, but I'm going to choose to say this is written in pencil, and I reserve the right to continue to grow and change. But right now I would define sexual as sensual awareness of my body being present to God, myself, and another.